Okay, thank you very much.
Can cheer us up here.
Yes, I'm not sure I'll be able to. I expect that my paper is going to divide opinion, although I hope that the division is not going to be so extreme that by the end of this it's me against all of you. But what I wanted to look in this paper, what I wanted to focus on, was the role of press partisanship. Not only in terms of Leveson's conception of media freedom, which underpins his recommendations, but also as well how this notion might impact on the work of the Leveson regulator once installed, or regulators, to achieve the kind of cultural changes that Leveson claims are necessary. And my starting point for this, and I suppose my focal point as well, is to come back to the point that Leveson is very clear throughout his report that he's concerned about the impact of intrusive media practices on the, in terms of the real harm that's caused to real people. And I'm going to use that phrase as a bit of a touchstone. And he also expresses concern about what he perceives to be the widespread cultural indifference within the press to individual privacy and dignity, including often an apparent disregard or an indifference to the consequences of publication on the subjects involved. So his recommendations, therefore, we can assume, are intended to address this problematic behaviour through regulation. So by articulating a narrow but I think defensible conception of press freedom that Eric touched upon this morning, Leveson offers, I think, a persuasive account of why these regulatory measures need not unduly interfere with the media's primary role as a public watchdog. Yet Leveson also claims press partisanship forms an integral part of media freedom for reasons that I think are understandable, but for reasons that are largely obscure. So as a consequence, it seems to me that and others, Eric touched on this, that media freedom is valued instrumentally for the good that it does in serving the democratic participation and truth discovery interests of its readership. But partisanship appears to be valued intrinsically, so not for the good that it does generally for the public, but just for some intrinsic reason. But the value of press partisanship isn't really explored in the Leveson report, and that to me is a missed opportunity to at least try and think about why we should value press partisanship so much. But also, I think it creates a tension between the sanctity of press partisanship and the desire to instill greater levels of accountability and responsibility within the press. And in turn, I think this presents the regulator with a problem that they're going to have to overcome or at least address, since the failure to specify or clarify the value of partisanship impairs the realisation of a reformed press, or so I argue in this paper. In order to illustrate this point, I really want to consider the kind of cases where there is some sort of identifiable public interest at stake in the story. And I want to consider this in two contexts, which I look at in more detail in the paper itself. And that's where the press engages in what might be described as excessive criticism of the subject, but also where the press engages in what I term disproportionate reporting. So the kind of situations where, although there's an identifiable public interest at stake, because we can say there's some sort of democratic process value or truth discovery happening, those values are really engaged only very minimally, and certainly disproportionately when compared to the intrusions into the subject's private life and dignity. And what I try and do in the paper is set up this argument where I'm really trying to argue that both in normative terms and doctrinal terms, we don't need to value partisanship so highly in order to preserve freedom of the press and the freedom of the press to conduct its vital role as a public watchdog. But in making this point, I'm not trying to suggest that the solution to these issues that I'm flagging up is going to be straightforward for the regulator. And in actual fact, I'm actually very sceptical that Leveson's ultimate aim for regulation can be realised. I'm just not convinced that we are going to see these broad cultural changes to the press. And I think to some extent, that failure, should it be realised, may be due to this missed opportunity to actually tackle up front why it's so important for our press to be partisan. So far I've sort of given partisanship a sort of natural meaning. Leveson doesn't define partisanship in his report. And again, I think this is for understandable and obvious reasons, because partisanship is a nebulous concept. It could apply in lots of different ways, which again I think adds to this problematic sense for the regulator. So we could say that partisanship entitles the press to publish biased and bigoted commentary, accompanying stories that contain inaccurate information or indeed accurate information. We could say that trenchant criticism is a form of partisanship. We could say that partisanship also lends itself to the method of information gathering, so it defends the press where they use hostile or persistent attempts to obtain an interview. And in combination, these different aspects of partisanship might result in the kind of disproportionate reporting that I'm going to consider in a moment. But whereas Leveson is fairly clear in his report that inaccurate journalism ought to cease, and that persistent and or hostile attempts to obtain an interview might be a reason to complain to the regulator, it seems to me that he's more ambiguous on the position of excess criticism and how a regulator should handle that, and also disproportionate reporting. So for the Leveson regulator once installed, these problems might arise due to the nebulous nature of partisanship as a concept and due to the method of valuing it for its intrinsic value. In the paper I consider two examples. The first is the recent Lucy Meadows case, and the other one is the Mary Bale case, which you may or may not be familiar with. But in brief, Mary Bale achieved a degree of notoriety in 2010 when she dropped a cat in a wheelie bin and then left it there. And the Sun, in its usual sort of exaggerated tones, expressed the horror of the nation, who was sickened by this terrible act. And of course, I'm not trying to defend animal cruelty, although should be emphasised the cat was fine. But what was interesting was that a couple of pages into the same edition, there was a survey on public feelings on the Afghanistan war, and were people in favour of it, and sort of 50% yeah, 50% no, 50% not bothered. So there was a stark contrast between the outrage about the plight of this cat, a human tragedy happening abroad, and that was an everyday event. Instead, I want to concentrate on the Lucy Meadows story, which I expect you're all familiar with already, but just to briefly recap. This is the story that happened in December last year, where Richard Littlejohn of the Daily Mail, in his typical abrupt and idiosyncratic way, attacked a primary school's decision to notify parents by means of a newsletter that one of its teachers, Nathan Upton, would be undergoing a gender reassignment procedure during the holidays and would be returning as Lucy Meadows. Not only was Little John outraged by this, but he then proceeded to attack Meadows personally for remaining at the school when it would have been better, according to Little John at least, for her to have had the procedure and then taught somewhere else in the same vicinity. And he claimed that that Meadows wasn't only in the wrong body, she was also in the wrong job. In fact, I'm being kind. Yeah. After this, there followed a period of intense media interest during which Miss Meadows complained to friends of press harassment. And she was found dead in her home on the 19th of March this year, sparking a campaign for Little John to be sacked, which I myself signed up to. Well, look, in the paper I suggest that although this type of story seems to contain the kind of problematic behaviour that Leveson is getting at, you know, this is real harm caused to real people. And feel free to disagree with me, and I'm sure you will, but I find it difficult to see how the regulator might penalise the Daily Mail for its reporting, given the public interest at stake. Thank you. In terms of the sort of press harassment aspect of it, it's entirely likely that Meadows felt this sense of press harassment because not only did the Daily Mail report on this, but other titles then jumped on the story. Now, how is a regulator to penalise papers for taking that decision? It seems to me that the decision to report is well within this idea of partisanship. Also, to penalise the Daily Mail for the position that it adopts on this issue also seems problematic because, in short, I think the regulator is going to be put in an invidious position. The difficulty is that this is an offensive opinion, but it's an offensive opinion within a range of opinions that might be expressed. And the regulator might feel uncomfortable that they're actually preventing a particular viewpoint from being expressed by penalising the paper for the stance that it took. Now, in the paper, I sort of go into more detail about how I think treating partisanship in sort of less absolute terms and in more qualified terms is entirely consistent with free speech theory. We're not going to damage the democratic process value by doing that. And I also try and set out in the paper as well how I think it's consistent with Strasbourg jurisprudence. And in doing so, I fully accept that the Strasbourg jurisprudence, on one reading of it at least, is largely very supportive of press partisanship. There are strong statements that we can see in the case law that would seem to support the right of the press to adopt or take a partial view. But at the same time, there are other cases that we can point to where the court has made it clear. I'm thinking now of a case like Pfeiffer against Austria. The court has made it clear that the state has an obligation to protect reputation under Article 8, and this includes protecting individuals where the press makes a statement that goes beyond reasonable criticism. And also, as well, I think in looking at the Strasbourg jurisprudence, I also think it depends as well, when you're looking at these supportive statements, where you put the emphasis, because the Strasbourg court has also made it clear that the press must not overstep the mark. It's also said that this is particularly important where it's reporting on matters of public interest. So it seems to me that there is scope for a regulator to interfere with partisanship where the court thinks that that's necessary. The reason I adopt a sceptical view in the paper, though, is because I'm not convinced, and perhaps due to the political pressure and the political scrutiny it'll be under, I'm not convinced that the regulator will want to take such a hard line. And that, I suppose, continuing the depressing theme, that I can sort of see the status quo continuing where real harm is caused to real people and nothing meaningful is done about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.